Motherhood is all about self-love. Doula's always saying to mother, you have the answers. You know, life that is growing inside of you is really your greatest teacher. A lot of my work is to help us work from the inside. Birth transforms us in a really, really powerful way.
I'm not ready for even talking about it. Welcome to the extra stage party, Quintero.
Yes.
Is it right?
Yes, it's perfect. Okay.
The most amazing doula known as Una Mother.
Uma
Mother, yoga and birth educator, Vedic meditation teacher and mentor. We're going to talk about all of this. And finally, mother of two. Your kids a little bit older. I know I've seen pictures of them on Instagram, so yeah. Congrats. And you know, still congrats. You still had
they're
them.
They're still my babies.
Yeah, they're still your babies. Just like, you know, we're talking here a lot with women who just had kids. So always say congrats, but still congrats.
Yes,
so.
Thank you. I feel lucky to be a mother. So I'll take the congratulations.
It's a blessing. And I'm sure every day is, you know, blessing with your kids.
Yes.
Before we dive into kind of like postpartum, pregnancy, all the work that you do, your yoga, meditation, we want to know a little bit about you and how you started this journey. Mm-hmm. I know you were, I just found out this. I know you were a kindergarten teacher, so you obviously like kids and mm-hmm. you're around kids, but we kind of want to hear from you how it progressed into being the most amazing doula that mm-hmm. you can be and teacher. Meditator, you know, yeah. Get into it.
Well, I think ever since I had a really lovely childhood. So I have very good imprints of these years of being young and growing up and just being a child and the magic that childhood.
In US or Colombia?
I actually was born here in California. My parents are Colombian. Okay. I was born here and then we moved to Colombia. So both here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm definitely 100% Colombian, but I was born in California and then we moved to Bogota when I was about 5. Wow. So I would say even from living here and then living there, I really had positive experiences and a very close relationship and still have a close relationship to my mother. So I did have some positive imprints of what motherhood is and could be, and also of what it's like to be a child. But even just as a child, whenever there were babies around, I had an affinity with babies. Like someone would say, you know, here, hold the baby. And I would hold the baby and the baby would stop crying. Or they would be like, do you want to watch the baby? And babies would just laugh with me. Yeah. It was just something that they would be like, wow, my baby really loves Patty. And so I don't think it was anything like extraordinary in me. I think that I just had this, I was attuned with the vibration of children and of babies.
Even before inherently. You became a mother yourself.
Way before.
Wow.
Way before. And I babysat and I took care of kids. And then it wasn't really until I got my undergrad in film and theater. And actually, to rewind a little bit, when I was about 5, I used to have kids from the neighborhood come and I would teach them how to do tumbling and how to jump and how to stretch. And it was almost like I was already starting to teach my version of yoga. But I always had that teacher within me. And as I grew and when I graduated high school, I thought that me being on stage was me being an actor, but it really was me wanting to teach. So I got a double major in film and theater because when I went to school, music videos were a big thing and I wanted to make music videos. I'm a huge music lover. So I was like, okay, I'm going to graduate, go to New York and make music videos or act. And I got to New York and the music video world and the whole industry was not for me. And I started to do auditions and I realized I wasn't feeling fulfilled doing the acting or doing that. So I went and I got a job uptown teaching children and I would teach them tumbling and movement. And it was just like,
What is tumbling?
Tumbling is when they teach you how to do somersaults and coordination and jumping things and catching things. And it's really a place where children gain coordination and confidence. And I did it like with my eyes closed. It just was something that came so, it was so familiar to me. And at the same time, that's where I started my yoga journey. I went to a place in the West Village to learn meditation. It was called Yogaville, Satchidananda Center. And that was my doorway into yoga. It was through meditation. And I started to practice meditation at the New York Sports Club and at Shivananda in Chelsea. And yoga really became a foundation for me in those years living in New York. And when I was there, I decided I can't do this winter. I'm a beach girl. I'm going to go back to Miami and I'm going to get my master's in education. That's kind of where I pivoted and realized, well, I don't want to act and I don't want to do this. So I'm going to go and work with children. So I got my master's in education, went back to Miami to be in a mini skirt and flip-flops, which was much better for me than the winter.
So much better. I agree.
I'm such a sunshine girl. I mean, you're from Russia, so you're used to cold weather, right?
I used to, but that's why I never want to, like, people don't understand me. I never want to live in a cold because I grew up going to school through, like, the snow and, like, you know, 40 minutes of, like, fighting the sun. I'm like, why would I ever want to be in a cold?
Yeah, it's true.
I want to be in the sun, you know? Like ever, forever.
Yeah, me too. I'm a sunshine girl. So So I came back and I got my master's and decided I'm moving back to California where I was born. And I always knew I was going to come back here. There was dreams I had and there were, I don't know, I wouldn't say visions, but there was this inner knowing. It's almost as though I could remember the future when
It was manifestations.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. I think manifestations are always happening. You know, nature is always manifesting. So nature was manifesting where it needed me to be, and that was in Los Angeles. So I came back and I became a kindergarten teacher in the Pacific Palisades. My friend Elise Walker, who lived there, was saying, you know, you can work at this great school called Marquez.
Elise Walker, yes. The one that opened up the store.
Yes. Nice. She's a good friend of mine because I went to film school with her brother.
Oh, cute.
So I've known Elise for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, you should work here. I live in the Palisades, work here. And I landed there and I started to teach kindergarten. And sure enough, all the things that you have to teach in school, I would do quickly. And then I'd be like, okay, close the windows, get on the ground, let's do yoga.
I love that.
Because I was like, they're five and they're four and there was all these things and, just making them sit in a square. And I was like, we need to move. So we would do animal movements and we'd roar and we'd do all the yoga poses that were like, you know, mimicking nature, tree pose. And we'd go outside and we'd do this. And then I would say, okay, everyone lie down on their back and we're going to do Shavasana, which is corpse pose. And I'd say, you know, I'm going to come around and feel that you're a rag doll. And I would take them on this imagination journey, like they were riding a magic carpet and they were going to a beautiful place where they felt safe and happy and alive. And I mean, it was, I could get teary eyed because it was so great and they just loved it. And at that point I realized I was doing a lot of yoga trainings here and there. And I had met my ex-husband, my then to become husband. And he was moving to Cabo, San Lucas, Cabo, to teach yoga and open a restaurant. And I was like, great, I want to do that too. So I left my kindergarten teaching career after starting to teach some of the parents yoga and all that. And we moved to the Baja and we started teaching yoga there. At some of the places like there's Ventanas, they didn't have yoga programs back then. And we came in and we created yoga programs for them.
In Cabo.
Yeah. And at that point, we said, you know what? Let's go back and get married in LA. We came back to LA and got married. And I took a training with my ex-husband at Yoga Works. And the owner of the studio, her name was Mati. She's passed.
You still work at Yoga Works,
I don't
right?
anymore. Yoga don't Works anymore. Has closed its physical locations down.
Oh, wow.
But they still have me up on their website. They still have
my
videos
second
up.
Pregnancy. I still did all of your, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they still have many of my videos on
the videos, the podcast videos on the platform of, what is it, prenatal?
I have prenatal, postnatal. Yeah. I have videos in Spanish. Yeah. I helped them launch that platform a long time ago. So, doing that training we both got hired right out of the training and we started to teach there in 2001. And it became just my life, teaching yoga. And in that, as I was practicing, I started to do some prenatal trainings, knowing that I knew I was going to get pregnant at some point. And when I would take a prenatal class, everything was, okay, don't do this, don't do that, side stretch here, side stretch there. And when I was pregnant, I felt like superhuman. I felt so alive. Yeah. I felt like I'm building a human as I'm like eating dinner and walking around and buying things. There's this human growing inside of me. And so I couldn't really subscribe to the don't do this, don't do that, all the fears that were around it. And I thought, I'm going to teach yoga, a strong version of flow yoga that's still safe, that empowers mothers. And I started to do it while I was pregnant, and people came, and then they came and more came and more came, as you know.
That's where I met Patti. Yeah. So to just say my little story, how I met you. So we were looking for a doula because me and Brian, we just met, we got pregnant. We had no idea what we were doing. And we decided we wanted a doula to kind of support, tell us what to do a little bit. And we couldn't find anyone I could connect at all, because at that time I couldn't connect with a lot of people in general on, I don't know. I was just all over the place at that point, you know, with my career, and I was just not in a good space mentally, I think. So I went to your yoga class. I always liked yoga. It made me feel more calm, you know, but when I saw you, it's just like, you can probably feel the energy of Patti. I was just like, she
so
has
calming
to,
and
she, I don't know, she's a yoga teacher, but she, I have to ask her. And apparently you were a doula, and I was like, you have to support me. And she did not answer my text messages for months. She's like, I'm too busy. I have literally baby on that exact due date.
That's right.
And she would not take me, and I just kept calling her, showing up to class. I'm like, hey, buddy, you didn't answer my message. And she's like, oh my God, this girl again.
That's true. I'm so happy you're telling this story because I'm remembering all of this. Yeah. You really pursued me.
Yeah, I really did. And so after a while, you're like, okay, you know what? I just want to let you know that I have another woman delivering. Like, it was 23rd and Anna Sophia's was 21, like a due date. I ended up delivering on the 1st, way after your other lady. Uh-huh. So, yeah. So you finally decided to, you know, come work with us.
Right.
And all I remember is just like your energy was like so insane. And like you made me feel right before my delivery, you just made me feel so calm. And I would call you and I was like, you know, I have side pains, you know, the growing pains, yes, or this or that. And, you know, I feel like even my energy from, you know, from where I met you to my second delivery, just like changed so much with having kids. And we'll get into it like a little bit more later. But what do you think it is for a woman to have kids? Why does it change our energy so much, and why doesn't ground us so much? And is having kids just what we're meant to do? And like everything before is just like a phase. Like that's how it was for me.
Yeah.
And because you're, you know, see so many women delivering baby, being pregnant, like what is this? What do you think is this? Kids make us grounded, or what is this?
Well, I think that birth is definitely one of the most powerful rites of passage. And now that you're both mothers of children that are toddlers, you realize that birth is really just the opening act of the transformation. And, you know, I think for women who don't have children, there's many rites of passage we go through. But it is indeed true, and as someone who's worked in that field for so long, that birth transforms us in a really, really powerful way. And I remember saying this to you because you came to me and it was just like, it was like, oh my God, what's happening? This is so scary. My life is being turned upside down. Yeah. And I remember telling you, yes, your life is being turned upside down, but that means something good is happening.
I know.
You know, we, when we are confronted usually with anything, including birth, that scares us and reckons with our old ways of living and our old belief systems and strips us of all of the fears that we have, something really good is happening. Unfortunately, a lot of the times what we've seen as young girls is fear around this, fear around our own bodies, fear around the incredible things that our bodies can do. From a young age, we're told, kind of taught to fear that. And I'm speaking for this country a lot of the sex education, the lack of education. So when suddenly, and then we see things in Hollywood films, and we see chaos, and we see yelling, and we see a lot of experiences where a mother-to-be is out of her body and looking for guidance from the outside. And my work, a lot of my work is to help us work from the inside. And so from the very beginning, like what I told you, I'm like, tune in. This is what we do when we practice yoga. We're yoga is not really a practice per se. Yoga is a state of consciousness. Yoga means union. So in the state of consciousness of yoga, that union is when I recognize that I am everything. I'm not just small self. And that practice of meditation is a form of yoga. It's a way of unifying with the cosmic essence that you are. So these become foundations in those rites of passage, whether it's birth or death or divorce or any of these rites of passage, which ultimately, when we look beyond the actual experience, we realize that it was an arrow being pulled back so that we could shoot even further forward.
Wow.
And so to kind of like come back to what you were saying, I do feel that it is a massive transformation, not only physically, because suddenly it's been all about you. And now you have this essence of life growing inside of you. And it's a recipient to your thoughts, to the food you eat, to the way you treat your body, to the people that you interact with. Because they're feeling your stress chemistry and you're the mothership. They're inside of you and, you know, they're experiencing all that. And so we do what we can and we start learning to like care for ourselves in a different way, because ultimately motherhood is all about self-love. And it starts from that moment of before. It starts from preconception, taking better care of my body. If you get pregnant by surprise, then, I mean, I don't know how much surprise there is there, but you know, without expecting to get pregnant,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then it starts to shape you there, because you start to say, okay, well, I guess I, you know, should stop doing this or should stop doing this. Or, you know, you start suddenly realizing that life that is growing inside of you is really your greatest teacher. And they're teaching you how to love yourself more and fully accept yourself more. Because, and I speak to your industry, you know, you're both models and you've grown up in an industry that really kind of can be, you know, like identifying a lot with, do I look okay? Am I the right shape in order to get the work that I'm doing? And we know that if we have daughters, especially when that daughter says to you, I'm ugly, or I wish I looked like her, or I'm too big, or I'm too small. And you're looking at this magnificent creature inside of you. To tell them, you have to become it. So to teach them, no, you're magnificent the way you are. We have to start believing that ourselves. So that's where the
reckoning starts. They mimic us.
They mimic us. They're watching us. They're feeling us. They're looking at us. And they're not looking for perfection.
Yeah.
Because perfection is a myth. It's all about what I do with that. You know, how can I be the best preceptor of what I want to teach my children? I don't want to teach them to be perfect. I want to teach them to have their feelings and to know that we're all going to be in those dark spaces, but we always can come back up. And so, yeah, I don't know. I got off on a big tangent there.
It always happens in this podcast. Just trust me.
I finally get to talk to you. I'm glad.
Sorry.
But I have like butterflies listening to you and like to your story
the
too.
Whole time.
It's like, yeah, it's so beautiful. And I'll never forget that moment when Axel, my son, was born. And specifically, I would say like that minute, that first minute, it's just like it was so silent. And I felt like in a different world. And I knew that's the moment that my whole life changed forever. It was just the most magical thing I could ever experience. So I agree with you. Yeah, like everything changes after that. And I think a lot of people don't talk about that afterbirth experience, but we'll touch that a little bit later. Yeah, it's just so beautiful. I'm like blown away.
She's teary.
Yeah, I'm tearing up. But talking of maybe a little bit about more like that doula side that you do, right? Because you do so many different things.
Yes.
And I'll be more curious as well to hear about you as doula. How do you think, like, what is the biggest difference when moms deliver babies in a hospital?
Mm-hmm.
And what is your role as doula? And what's the difference when moms deliver babies at home?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, maybe we start by defining what doula is for people. We live in LA and it's a quite popular word here. But some people are like, doula, what? What is that? So the word doula actually means servant, someone who has come to serve in the most beautiful way, because that is what a doula is doing. You are coming to serve a mother through a portal of transformation. And there's different portals. You know, there's birth doulas, there's death doulas, there are postpartum doulas, and there are doulas that come in to support people through abortions or miscarriage.
Wow, so, I didn't even know.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah, and so someone who does all of those would be called a full spectrum doula. I am a birth doula, and I've been a birth doula. Kind of maybe hanging my hat up soon in that department. But at the moment, I still do births. And I have done postpartum work as well. But so we want to think of a doula as that person who comes in to support you and guide you and be a guardian in that space for you. And everyone's going to have different definitions. Some people say it's a birth coach. I don't resonate with the word coach. It's just not too much of my style. I think mentor, I think teacher, I think guardian, I think anchor. So that is a doula. And I've done many births, and I've done many hospital births, and I've done many home births, and they are very different in many ways. And the way that a doula will come in is really dependent on what you need. So it's not the doula's agenda. The doula will come in and educate you and your partner, if there's a partner, and to help empower you both to curate and create the experience that is right for you. So if you are working with me, and Marina knows this because she's worked with me, I'm not here to tell her, you need to do this, you need to do this, and you need to have this birth, because that's my story. She knows her story best, and she knows what she needs best. So a doula is always saying to mother, you have the answers. You know, you may not have awakened the knowledge yet, because you both know when you didn't know what's first stage labor, what's, you know, what is ring of fire, all those things that we don't know until we learn them. So a doula will give birth education and will kind of talk to the partner as well. Some partners are like, I want to help catch baby. I want to be squeezing hips. I want to do it all. Then my job as that person's doula would be to help teach him, empower him or her as a partner so that they can show up in the best way for the mother. Some might be like, you know what? I'm not good with blood. I'll be over here up top. I don't need to see things. That's okay too. It's not my job.
It was Brian.
Yeah.
At the first birth.
The first birth. Yeah. The second one, he was right there.
I will tell you about my second birth because I can't wait to share
it.
Wait. Yeah, yeah.
I'm having flashbacks of your first birth now that we're kind of sprinkling it in.
Yeah.
So that's that layer. Birth education is a huge part of a doula. And the doula really kind of starts to serve both. And every doula has different traits that they bring. Some doulas are full-time massage therapists before they did this. And some, like I have the yoga and meditation as my foundation. So I bring that into it. But we also massage quite a bit. We squeeze hips quite a bit. So we teach you all the comfort measures and show you all the different tools that we could bring into the setting. We talk about how long we want to stay home. We talk about what we're going to do when we're in the room. We talk about what you can say yes and no to, which everything you can say yes to no, because you are the boss. And so we talk about, you know, changing physicians. Sometimes people are with an OB, and once we start to gain the education, they're like, that's probably not going to be the person for me. Mm-hmm. So knowing that you can actually switch providers, mm-hmm. There's just a million things. And as an educator, that's where I get really excited. I love turning light bulbs on and helping people turn light bulbs on so that they can make the choices for them. I might do all of this with you and you might say to me, Patty, thank you for all this education. What feels right for me is a cesarean. Then I will come and support you in that. You know, and this is very much like parenthood. You know, I don't know what that person's, I do know because I'll ask that person about their history and trauma, but I want to respect that person and the choice that they're making, unless they're doing something to really hurt themselves.
Do you feel like it happens a lot where...
No, where they suddenly learn all this and they decide. No, it doesn't happen often. But, you know, if there's a history of sexual abuse, if there is some kind of trauma, we have to meet people where they're at. So if that is the case and someone has decided to do this, and I'm not saying like a breech baby is really a variation of normal. You can have a breech baby vaginally, which is a baby butt down. But there are legitimate reasons for this. And it's not my choice. It's their choice. So my work then will be like, okay, how do we best support you in this situation?
So how do we never try to kind of lead them into maybe let's try not to do this cesarean, like a little bit? I feel like you would try, like at least a little bit.
I think just the knowing of being in my class.
Yeah.
And clients of mine who know me would be like, yeah, she tried, but she always had respect. Like I will present the information, but I don't know what's best for them.
Yeah.
They know because
they feel that
there's a lesson in that for them. And mother's intuition is very powerful. And so me trying to convince them is me trying to mute your intuition. And maybe that's just fear and that's okay too. And this is kind of part of parenting, you know, unless we are going to be helicopter parents controlling, we guide, we model, we present. And as your children get older, you know, they're going to do what they want to do. Like my daughter is learning to be a pilot and she's flying as we're recording this.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, I have to feel okay. Thank God for meditation. And my son does MMA. So,
wow.
You know, it's all there for my growth. So back to your question, as a doula, we can now that what is true is that I don't work that much in hospitals anymore. And I definitely don't work with specific doctors.
Because, is that a reason?
Yes. When you see things, you can't unsee them. When you've seen a doctor being disrespectful to a mother in the birthing room or using a lot of fear tactics or scheduling an induction for them without getting their consent or, you know, just kind of taking away their, just not really honoring the process. I do have a choice and I choose not to work with them. Mm-hmm. I refer other doulas and that's their choice. I love referring many doulas to people. But at this point in my work, I do mostly home births and maybe I'll work with like three doctors if I do, because I know that they're going to respect the mother through that birth, they're going to allow her to do, you know, things and they're going to give their opinions, but they're not going to enforce them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like one of the things I teach, and you may remember this, is when someone says to me, my doctor won't let me, we want to change those words.
Yeah.
Because
or change a doctor.
Or change the doctor. And look, I think Western medicine has its place. But I also do believe that birth is not a medical event unless it legitimately needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that a little bit from your perspective, just the hospital birth? Why is it abusive? You know, some doctors are abusive, obviously. Tell us about the epidural. Tell us about the early inductions. Just if you want to,
like C-section as well. Yeah. Such a high rise, especially in America. I feel like
yes, we do have an alarmingly high rate of cesarean and induction rates, which is probably why birth educators kind of are doing the work that they do. You know, why did it start or when did it start?
Yeah,
I would say when birth started to become considered something medical.
Medical.
Taken away from midwives. Mm-hmm. You know, were there legitimate reasons? Were there maybe some, you know, deaths that took place? I'm sure there were, but I think as, you know, the medical movement grew and industrialization grew, it started to be going into the hands of doctors, and the majority of doctors back then were men. And so here you had this ritual of woman happening, and suddenly in the hands of a man, and in a place where it was more comfortable for them to access a mother, which means on your back, lifting the bed so that I can be in a position. So it's basically accommodating mother to doctor versus doctor to mother. Mm-hmm. And I really do want to preface this by saying I don't call either side good or bad. I just think that there's a place for medical interventions, and there's a place for that. And most of the time, we don't need those medical interventions. But when you're under the roof of a hospital, which really is run by insurance and, you know, a lot of pharmaceuticals, then it's almost like you're already stepping into a place where they're going to look at you as, you know, as though something is wrong with you, and approach you that way and approach birth that way. So it's not so much, I think that it comes to training. I don't know. My dream would be to see doctors mentoring under midwives or beside midwives. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be under midwives, but in your training as an OBGYN, you would spend time at home births, and you would witness what it is to have a physiologic birth, a birth that is uninterrupted, a birth that is mother-driven, a birth where there's not a bunch of people coming in and out, asking you questions with fluorescent lights and with gown.
That was a nightmare for me.
And with this and that. And even prior to going into labor, a birth where they're not putting you on a scale. They're asking you, what did you eat? Tell me what your breakfast is like. Tell me, I don't care how much you weigh. I want to know what you eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And let's help curate a really nutrient-dense diet, eating habits for you. I don't even like to call it diet, mm-hmm. so that you're eating well. Maybe they'll sit and they'll say, what was your birth like? How were you born? These are things that we talked about. How were you born? How were you born? Why? Because that's all going to help me serve you better, because I know what you're going to be bringing into the room, because I'm going to look at you as an individual, not because you're 35 and you're geriatric, but because, I mean, I'm 52, someone next to me at 52, we'd have completely different panels and completely different mm-hmm. body clocks. So I can't say to you, because you are this number, you are geriatric, or because you are this number, we need to induce you. Mm-hmm. Or because you are this number, we're going to induce you at 39 weeks. Every baby grows at different rates. Now, is it great to know that you have enough fluids? Yes. Is it great to know that baby's heart tones are doing well? Absolutely. But this idea of putting inductions on people and saying we're going to schedule an induction is basically, to me, telling nature, you're faulty. We're going to let small self take over mm-hmm. because female bodies don't know how to have babies anymore. Female bodies don't know what they're doing. So we're going to take over. Not okay. Are there legitimate reasons for inductions? 100%. And I'm so glad that there is the medication to help induce, and it has its place to be used versus abused, as does an epidural. An epidural is pain medication that oftentimes can be what helps a person get to a vaginal birth. So I'm not going to say an epidural is bad. I'm not going to say anything is good or bad, because in my view, those are small terms. We have to look at things in a much bigger picture. Sometimes it's necessary and sometimes it's not. And sometimes we didn't think that it was going to go in this direction, and the current just took us there. You know, like when I prep somebody for a home birth, I'm like, let's talk about all the different pathways mm-hmm. because if you go through A, B, or C, I want you to feel heard, seen, empowered, and connected to your body and to your baby. So that to me is more important, but educating people on what they can say no to, you can say no to an induction. And if someone is going to tell you, we want to induce you because you're this age, ask them why and ask them for the data of why they're doing it. And if you choose to do it, beautiful, you chose. So this is where we're getting at is I think that a lot of, you know, maybe we will not change the medical system. My dream would be to see more collaborative care where midwives work with doctors and doctors learn from midwives. You know, I just did a birth with a doctor who I'm really enjoying and appreciating. And she was willing to kind of talk to the midwife and we came for the birth and she was hands off. And, you know, she really supported this birth like if it was a home birth and told all the nurses to get out and let her be in any position. And I don't even want to say the word let, but witnessed it all. And she said to us after, I learned so much from working with you. And I was like, wow. I love that. Mm-hmm. Not because one is better than the other, but because together, you know, it could be wonderful. Home birth is not for everybody. Mm-hmm. And hospital birth is not for everybody. But fear creates huge, huge problems with blood pressure, with hemorrhaging. Oh. You know, we don't want to step into birth with this fear of like,
it's the fear, yeah.
They're going to make me, or what is it going to be like? Mm-hmm. So.
I had a question I forgot now because
I kind of start pulling threads and then I'm like, okay, did I go off tangent?
Let me ask this question. It just popped in my head. So you said that one doctor was so nice to you, mm-hmm. and like she was willing to collaborate with you and you felt like a team. So most of the time it's not like that. You feel like doctors are kind of not being nice to doulas. You feel like they don't. What do you think it is?
You know,
I feel like you're stepping in their zone or something.
I think that there is, anytime there's fear, it's lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Knowledge eliminates fear. That's a big statement to take home. Knowledge eliminates fear.
Knowledge.
And reactivity oftentimes comes from fear, right? When we're not living in fear, we can interact with life and we're not reactive. So I think that there's a few things. I think that oftentimes doctors may feel as though the doula is coming in to interfere with what they're doing. And if that's the approach, then that doctor might be working from a fear-based rhetoric. So what I appreciate is a doctor that says, I actually have never witnessed a home birth, so I can't tell you if it's safe or not. That I appreciate. I appreciate a doctor saying, you know what? This is common. We do induce, but you're right. There is not, you know, I think that to me is a value. Someone saying, you know, I don't know, teach me. That to me is a person who's not approaching something with fear. So if, you know, not a lot of doctors do support doulas, but I think midwives and doctors are kind of apples and oranges sometimes. And midwives that work in hospitals are really under that umbrella of the medical system as well. So a lot of them have their hands tied behind their back as well, because they're working under this very litigious,
system.
So I do believe that there's a place where doulas can work with doctors. I mean, I've not had confrontations with doctors. I'm very much of a bridge builder. So The way I see it is, let's say if baby's been born and my client was like, we don't want to cut the cord, and they have those clamps out ready to clamp, I'll put my hand on the doctor's shoulder and I'll say,
it happened with us, yeah. Remember?
I'll say, what a beautiful cord. And I'll just kind of try to gain time and I'll be like, I think it's still pulsating. And they're like, oh no, it's done. I'm like, I think, look, oh, it's still pulsating. So it's kind of like how you teach children, you know, you don't say to them, no, we're going to do this. There's a way. And there have been time where a doctor's like, I'm sorry, you're going to have to stop. Heart tones are dropping.
Oh, wow.
And you know, she had a lot of stress.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, when we've been in situations where there's been a loss or something scary has happened.
We wanted to ask you actually about if you had any situations, scary ones. You know, or maybe funny ones, you know, whatever.
Scary
you
and
surprising.
Funny.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's get to the scary first.
Okay.
I think, again, scary has a lot to do with our state of consciousness, okay. Right? I'm also I'm not a midwife, so I don't carry the responsibility. And I actually think midwives don't carry the responsibility. They're there to make sure they keep you safe if you hemorrhage and communicate with you. But things happen. Birth and death are kind of like this. So it can get scary sometimes. And I think when people come to me and they have a lot of fear, I like to open up the box of fear and say, let's pull out what we're afraid of. Hemorrhage, resuscitation, those are usually the cases, right? You know,
hemorrhage is bleeding.
Hemorrhage is when you're bleeding excessively, more than expected or more than hoped for. And resuscitation is when there's a lack of oxygen and baby is not getting enough oxygen in some way or form.
Can't wait to share my story. My second birth, it was insane. Yeah.
So these things are real. But what we know is that when a mother is connected to herself, embodied, has a practice of connecting with her intuition, not intuition that's like Google, like a deeper knowing.
Google mother.
Google. Well, this is why, especially in these days where we have so much information at our fingertips, it can really take us away from that inner, you know, that fine level of feeling. So we need to cultivate that fine level of feeling that we call intuition. And we need to really work on our state of consciousness because that's going to shape how I take care of my children and how I navigate birth and how I connect to what's happening. Most mothers know something's up. They do. And so as practitioners, we want to listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first thing, you know, and this is where sometimes we have to tune out the noise. Now, you know, sometimes this doesn't mean that having monitors on the whole time during your labor is going to lead to better outcomes. We know it doesn't lead to better outcomes. Having straps on and having cords on, it doesn't lead to better outcomes because the nervous system is not going to respond as efficiently. We want a lot of oxytocin coming through the body. We want a mother to be able to move her body and help move herself around to help get her baby out. So when we start to introduce interventions, whether it's straps on, a constant blood pressure monitor, a pharmaceutical, cables, you know, all of these things, we start to pull mother out of herself. And that's where things start to happen. So I am an advocate for, you know, keeping mother in her space and being more of a witness and stepping in when we need to, even as doulas. You know, sometimes I'll come in and I'll say, if this doesn't feel good, let me know, and I'll go away. Sometimes the best support I can give you is me sitting here and being an anchor of peace while you're doing what you're doing. You just like, I just need to know you're there. And so, you know, it's things can get scary. And what's going to help us in those scary moments, and you know as mothers, motherhood is scary. Life is scary.
You question
know?
Yourself.
Yeah,
all
we
the
question.
Time.
Yeah,
every
we
day.
Know that the only truth is that we are mortal and that this body's going to drop at some point. Maybe tomorrow, maybe in 50 years. That's a truth. And so that's kind of the work that I get excited about. If I practice moving beyond this twice daily, if I do my meditation practice and I start to go from being Patty doula mother and I relax so deeply that I start feeling like I'm everything, then when my eyes are open, I'm going to play with life differently. I'm not going to have to control everything so I feel safe and make sure you don't do this so nothing happens. That's no way to live. And it's definitely not a way to get our children to spread their wings. As my daughter's flying right now.
Right.
And you're really worried about it.
I'm really trying to keep it cool.
Literally.
It's so good for distracting you.
This kind of birth is where it all begins.
Mm-hmm.
Birth is where it all begins. So the way that we show up as doctors and as midwives and as doulas, we have to make sure that we're showing up as grounded and not, because you're going to feel that fear. When you're in labor, you're like, all your senses are open. Mm-hmm. You smell things, you see things. You'll hear like the person texting in the corner. You'll smell like the sushi that walked by and be like, get it away. So you're also going to feel the people in the room. And if the people in the room are nervous and and, you know, reacting, you're going to feel the effects of that. Funny things that have happened in labor.
Catching the baby, I guess.
You know, catching a baby. And honestly, the ironic part of this one particular baby that I caught was that it was my ex-husband's ex-fiance.
Oh my gosh.
So after I got divorced, my husband was going to get married to this woman who was lovely. And they ended up ending their, and they became engaged, but then they ended their relationship.
Mm-hmm. After the baby was born?
There was no baby. My ex-husband and her did not have a baby.
Oh, but you supported her after.
Yes, then she met it. Somebody mm-hmm. and she found me again. And she said, guess what? I'm pregnant and I want you to be my doula.
Okay.
And I said, okay. And she, my friend was her midwife and I was her doula. And she was having a girl. And when she went into labor, the midwife was a little bit further away than I was. So I got there first and it was a rapid birth. And she started to push. And I said, great. I put some gloves on. I got some olive oil. We had everything set up there and I just got into position. And then the midwife got there and she had the baby and the baby landed in my hands and I helped underneath her legs, you know, put her baby into her arms.
She was in her fourth?
She was on hands and knees. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was just like, you just don't know.
Yeah.
Like all the people we meet, what role you're going to play with them, all the stepping stones.
And your job is just every day so different because you never
so
know how, the outcome or like
you don't.
The process. Yeah.
You don't. And you know, you're prepared for all of it because everything for all reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of my work is helping bring people when they get to this point to bring them back here. And to bring them back here, we may not know, this may be a scary moment. But what do we know right now is that right now you're breathing, you're fine. You know, I always try to bring it when someone starts going into those spaces, like bring it right back here to the now.
It's mm-hmm. like being under the water almost. If you panic, you're done. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. It's very much like that. Whenever you're doing anything and you see it in birth, if you panic in that moment, like there are times I'll get to someone's home and if things are moving a little rapidly, they might go into sympathetic, you know, overdrive, which is kind of like fight or flight. And there, you could hear it in the voice, the eyes, the voice.
Is it the shakes?
The shakes are part of the
shakes,
the catecholamines.
I got the shakes in my second one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's how incredible your body is.
Wow.
It's dosing you with.
Did you get those shakes?
Yes.
Yeah. It's dosing you with the adrenaline
wow.
and the catecholamines and the uppers that you're going to need before you push your baby out.
Wow.
But when I get there and I see someone like, oh, like really screaming at high pitch, that's usually a disconnect because it's intense.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do is we bring them right back here, breathing in slowly, breathing out slowly.
Mm-hmm.
You're here. You know, you bring them into tangible somatic experience because sometimes that sensation can make you want to leave your body.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little bit like when you see your children, you know, if your kid, I always give this example, if your kid is at the park and they just fall down
oh my
and
God.
Boom, and they turn around and they look at you, because usually that's what a child does. They look right at mom to kind of like assess and you're like, oh.
That's when they panic.
Then they're going to panic.
It's true.
And so you're not going to ignore and so it's okay. It's okay. You're going to be like, ooh, you acknowledge, but you anchor them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need.
I always tell my little one, I'm like, you good? So I don't try to phrase like you good.
As so, they're bleeding.
Thank God it was never like that dramatic, but you know, kids fall all the time. So I always try to keep it very mellow, even though sometimes I'm like, okay, that was a little rough.
Yeah.
And he does a thing. He looks at me and he's like, yeah, I'm good. Like, oh,
yeah,
good.
He doesn't care when he falls. Like my girls, if they fall, they're like, ah, like it's so traumatic.
Yeah. And so, you know, even when someone is like that in labor and they are in that place, you see a lot of youth, like kind of like the little girl starts to come out a lot of the time. And sometimes it's the scared little girl that shows up in the woman. And sometimes it's the little girl that can't ask for what she needs. And sometimes it's the panicked little girl or the girl that's saying, I'm sorry to everyone. You see it.
That was me saying sorry to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I was like, I'm screaming too loud. I'm like, sorry about this. Sorry. To, yeah. So funny you mentioned
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you see it all. You see someone who's trying to avoid it. And I think that as a doula, and sometimes midwives do this work too, if you can help nurture that person and let them know that they're safe, that it's okay, you got this. What do you need? Ask for what you need. You know, sometimes we just need that mothering that we didn't necessarily get at that age.
You think that support is so important, right?
So important.
Yeah.
I think it's so important. And if it's not going to be that you hire a doula, have whomever you feel will be the right person to be your doula trained, like take them to birth education with you. I think that as I begin to do less births in this next year, I'm going back to what my focus is, which is I've been an educator for over two decades, and I want to go back to education. I'm very passionate about empowering people through those rites of passage.
Yoga, meditation?
Yeah, I definitely, I teach a lot of yoga and I'm teaching less yoga now, but I teach a lot of meditation, but I want to train doulas and people to learn how to do pre-postnatal yoga, to learn how to support people through birth and through postpartum, so that, you know, it might be like you might have your sister and you might be like, you know, I want my sister to be my doula. She could be trained to do that. With partners, it's sometimes tricky for them to be your doula. And I have trained partners to serve as people's, as their beloved's doula. But one thing that's different is that you are their beloved, and it's difficult sometimes for partners, and I say especially male partners, to see their beloved coming undone, because oftentimes they may want to fix it. And sometimes there's nothing to fix, but to bear witness to one of nature's most amazing and epic experiences. And that can be challenging. So
for men, and I've
worked with female partners also. I think that I've seen that they approach it with a little more integration. But some men do bring in those fears. So it's important for them also to get through their fears. And I mean, I just was speaking to a husband, and he said it was the hardest thing in the world to watch her in that space.
Really?
For hours upon hours. And all I remembered were your words, Patty. You know, be her mountain, be her mountain. You know, when he needed to, he'd go to the kitchen, he'd get something to drink, he'd shake it out and come back, because that's what she needed. She needed him to
be. He wanted to go to drink to calm down?
No, he didn't want to go get a drink.
He got a whiskey?
No.
He got her a drink. He got her a whiskey.
I think he would have loved to have a whiskey, but she would have probably smelled the whiskey on him. So he was just having.
She would probably smell from far.
Water.
She's like, what are you doing in a kitchen?
You do. Yeah. I had a husband bring in sushi not too long ago into the hospital room, and she just wanted to strangle him. She's like, let's get the sushi out of the room. Because so you're like funny. A bloodhound. Oh, yeah. So,
yeah, me and Ginta were driving here, you know, talking about our interview with you. And both of us did not want our mothers to be there, even though our mom, like my mom still lives with me, believe it or not. And her mom was here as well.
Yeah, right? We're very close with my mom. But I think it's maybe cultural things.
I love that you brought the mother up. Mm-hmm. And I'll speak as a mother, because I am a mother of a daughter, and I would love to be in my daughter's birth. And if she doesn't want me there, I will have to honor that. A mother can really derail a birth for her daughter. Because sometimes, and this is very dependent on the relationship you have with your mother, mother has to learn to let daughter be the mother in that space.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of an energetic umbilical cord that we oftentimes need to cut when we become pregnant with our mothers. Because a mother, even with good intention, wants to mother their daughter through that. And it's a place where she's really letting go. And
I'm
saying,
just sobbing here.
Yeah, mother issues or something.
You know, a lot of people do. And that's heartbreaking for mothers.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking for a mother who doesn't have the tools to actually see that that's a part of her growth too. And I'm going to cry. But so it's all there, and it's all about the state of consciousness we approach it with. So some daughters have to tell their mother, I love you, but you cannot be there for me. This is how you can be there. Yeah. So this is a really helpful thing that I do with couples. I'm like, you know what? If you don't want her to be in the room because you're going to have to be taking care of her, because you're going to think, is she okay? Because she's going to be, you know, nervous. That's not going to help you. So if she's not going to be invited into that space, let's give her a role. She can be the person that maybe is going to get food. She's going to be the person who can get the house ready. She's going to be, I'll even text her, be like, give me her number. I'll send her messages. That way she knows that you're safe.
Yeah.
We had a mother once break in past the nurses, try to come into the room. And it was just, I've had funny stories where like, even like a mother is like, we're at home and we're like, okay, it's time to go to the hospital. And she's like, I'm coming. And they tried to like lose her on their way. It's like so many stories.
So mother is a thing though.
Mother is
a thing. It's the reason we asked you about it.
And so when people say, I really want to have my mother, and I'm going to be their doula or their teacher, I'm like, let's talk about what that means. Or is your mother going to be able to be here while you're here? Is your mother going to be able to take the orders from you guys? Is your mother going to bring fear into the room? Is your mother going to be able to be exactly the person you need her to be without you having to mother her? Mm-hmm. All those things are important because they can get in the way. And sometimes that mother can do all of that and she is the best doula support that I could have ever wished for.
I know some girls who had their mom holding hand.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is so powerful. And yeah. I wish I could do it, but I could never imagine my mom being there with me. And she lives with me and, you know, we fight a
but
little
Marina,
bit.
But Marina, when you were pregnant with bro, did she ever like ask you or like was there ever a conversation about that?
No. I think it's something that we both knew was not going to happen. Yeah. Like she never said, oh, I'm coming to hospital with you, you know?
Yeah. But you're a mother of daughters. And maybe
I cry about it all the time and I'm so worried about my relationships and my little one does not acknowledge me for some reason. She only likes the dad.
How old is she?
She's almost two.
Well, you know, there's sometimes this place where kids pull away and they're trying to establish their own independence.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it happens at all different ages. And so it always comes back to how can I handle that? To us, it's a sign they don't love me.
Yeah.
And that kind of takes us back to our abandonment issues and everything.
And mommy, daddy issues.
Yeah. And so I think that a nice way to look at it is like, wow, one more thing for me to grow through. One more place to learn that she loves me in her own way.
I like try so hard with her. She just like won't ever kiss me or go to me.
It's so humbling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Motherhood and the growth never stops. I wish I could say at this point it does, but
I know.
Yeah. I tell every mother I work with, if you have chosen or fallen into this role of motherhood in this incarnation, you chose the greatest upgrade, the most powerful ride and roller coaster that you will ever, ever go through. Because to grow a human, to birth a human, to feed a human, and to let that human go.
I'm not ready for even talking about it.
It's like no other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So beautiful tears, because tears are a way of the body releasing what it needs to release. Tears are always so beautiful. And some cultures teach us not to cry.
Hello.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so how lucky that you have, there's no mistake that you have daughters. Those daughters are here to crack you open.
So maybe I can talk a little bit about Patti, about like my experience.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, I just really wanted to have this conversation with you because my first birth was very chaotic. You remember my water broke, but it wasn't really broken. And then I went to the hospital and Dr. Goldberg, who passed away, I really, really loved him as a doctor. He kind of let me sit there for like almost 2 days. Yeah. You know, like he kind of really knew I didn't want to have a C-section, but it was really traumatic for me for some reason because I wasn't dilating. And, you know, you remember Pitocin, epidural opened me up right away and I was pushing for 3 hours and you were telling me my body knows what to do. I was crying, screaming, I don't know, leave me alone. Like no one could tell me what to do. I mean, she came out finally, you know, but that was my first birth, I wouldn't say, like, looking back now, it wasn't traumatic. Mm-hmm. For me, it wasn't traumatic. Mm-hmm. It was maybe intense at the moment, but my body did well. My baby was fine. Brian was there. You guys were there. So overall, I don't have bad experience at all.
Yeah.
So my second one, I was in Miami and I was calling Dr. Goldberg. I think I texted you. And I said, listen, I can't imagine having kids with anyone else. And I've seen maybe 15 doctors in Miami. Like, I was a psychopath girl who was trying to find a doctor that I like. And I could not find a doctor that I like. So I went to Hollywood, and it's, you know, it's not the best part of Florida, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had this, a birthing center / two doors down hospital if something happens, uh-huh. right? But it's a midwife's. It's a midwife base. They had one doctor that I never met till mm-hmm. this day. She's it's all a big black woman, like very mothery, you know? And yeah. I really felt comfortable with them, you yeah. know? They're all like really like strong and big. They're like, hey, girl, like, yeah, don't worry. So they made me feel comfortable, mm-hmm. and I decided to drive 2 hours each time for my appointment to do that experience, you know, the midwife experience. So anyways, the day of my birth comes, and Brian is doubting me as usual. You can never do it. We're going to do Pitocin, epidural, and just like it was last time. He really pissed me off, but not in, like in a bad way, kind of just like, yeah, I'll prove you I can do it right. on my own.
Right.
So my due date, I go on a walk for the beach, on the beach for a walk. Not to walk to the beach. And I started to feel something. I go to my midwife. She's like, oh, you're like 6 centimeters dilated. You can stay here. We see what happens. I'm like, no, I'm going to go home, like chill, see what happens, you know, because my contractions are like, it felt to me just like a little tightening, like almost definitely not like first experience at all. I go home, I take a shower, we go back to the hospital. I'm like 7 centimeters, not the hospital, birthing center. I'm like 7 centimeters dilated. They're trying to put an IV for me because I had an infection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they take a test and I got the bad result.
TBS?
Yeah, I had that.
Uh-huh.
And they're trying to put an IV and she couldn't find my vein. And I was like, listen, that's not what I signed up for. I'm going to go back home. And I'm 7 centimeters at that point. All the plaques is out. Like, everything is out. I'm tired. I just don't want to see anyone. Same like, you know, before. Like, I don't really want to see anyone. I go home and I go to sleep. I wake up in my bed and I'm like, oh, something is like really happening, right? And it's like, and it's this. Oh, yeah. It's this is happening.
You're in transition.
Yeah. And I'm like about to push, yeah. right? Yeah. So I go to my hospital and I put the, I'm like, Brian, I don't know. And he's sleeping. We'll have to sleep. We don't like to be tired, right? And I'm like, something is happening. I think we need to go. Like, I think I'm might about to give a birth. So we get to the birthing center and there's like 6 girls who would deliver your baby. And my favorite one is on staff right there. Mitzi. Her name was Mitzi. So Mitzi is like, girl, you ready to push? I'm like, no. I'm like, give me epidural or something. I'm like, I was asking for Advil.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, please give me Advil because it's intense. So I'm 9 centimeters. Like, amazing. I'm about to push. And then something happened. My little girl's heart rate it's not there. Mm-hmm. It's not there. And I'm 9 centimeters. She's like, well, we need a little bit more. But what we can do, I will have to send you to the hospital, you know, next door. Because, you know, her heart rate is like 20. Like, she basically mm-hmm. had the cord.
Mm-hmm.
And every contraction I had, it pulled her up.
Mm-hmm.
So she wouldn't come down. Mm-hmm. She never came down.
Mm-hmm.
So she opened Mina up and she said, Marina, there's one chance of you delivering this baby. If you push really hard right now, and if you can't, I have to transfer you. I don't want your baby to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still like, you know, I'm in the bed. I'm not, you know, I don't have an IV. I have nothing on me. And I pushed so hard with one push, 9 centimeters dilated. in a sack still. Water is not broken. She was born in a sack, 9 centimeters. And she just flew out. And I kept pushing. She's like, girl, you know, relax. You can relax. She's out. She's safe. She undid her cord. So that was kind of my second experience, which
amazing.
Is amazing. Like, it was like so different than, you know, the first super medicated one.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Even I had this infection. She was still in her
She was
sack.
In her sack. She was born, that's called encol.
Yeah.
Encol. She was born in her amniotic sack, which is, a lot of people consider that very auspicious.
Really?
When babies are born
I've heard
their
that,
sack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they said, some people say the Dalai Lama is born in their sack. And I don't really know what the truth of that is, but when babies are born in their sack, it's supposed to be quite auspicious.
She did like break it right, you know, before she took her out.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was my second experience. And I was thinking about you. I'm like, oh, I wish Patty was here. She can see I can do it. And Brian seen I can do it. And I had no Pitocin, no epidural, no Advil. They didn't give me Advil. Does anyone help?
Does anyone help? Give me a shot of tequila.
Something, yeah.
Yeah.
But not medicated birth.
I got up right away, went to pee because I felt like peeing. And she's like, well, just relax. We need to take your, you know, placenta out. And it was like, yeah, it was such an amazing experience for me.
Yeah.
And I was just, yeah, I was just wanted to share that with you.
What do you think is your takeaway having had such different experiences?
I really don't know. I really wish my first one, I don't want to change anything, obviously, you know, because that was my experience and I cherish that and I respect that. But I wish I could connect more with you and listen to you a little bit more. I wish I could stay home a little bit longer than I rushed to the hospital. I wish I could not get the epidural or the Pitocin, you know. I just wish I could just feel Anna Sophia, you know, just like I felt Gia, like I was home alone, I was in the shower, and I, you know, it was intense, but for me, the contraction was, it was only a little bit painful right before I pushed.
Yeah.
It wasn't painful for me. It's like so strange, you know, and I don't know why. I really don't know why.
You know, the difference also is you weren't the person you are now.
That was my, I think that was my biggest
point. Yeah. You were experiencing such a metamorphosis on so many levels when you had your first, you know, and everything that you just reminded me of when you said that you were the chaos. The chaos was inside.
It was,
you know, and the this and the that, and so all those things kind of were orchestrating the way the birth unfolded. Also, so.
Yeah.
You can only be who you are at every stage. This is why it's so nice for us to be able to look over our shoulder into that past experience and realize that intensity doesn't mean trauma, right? Because you were being seen and you were heard. Even through that chaos, you felt supported.
Yeah.
And that you had tremendous growth. You had growth that you needed, and that growth gave you who you were for your next birth. And so on and so on. So
and for my kids and in general.
Kids in general. And for every other woman that comes to you and asks you, can I do this? You can say, yes, you can.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about second baby.
Yeah. She's like, oh my God, how am I going to be?
Yeah. So, you know, I could look at my experiences and I didn't have babies. I had vaginal births, but I didn't have my baby at home. And it was also because there was a lot of people like, no. I didn't have the knowledge. I hadn't awakened the knowledge that I have now. So I don't go to births and say, oh, I wish I had that birth. There's sometimes that I'm like, oh, how nice. especially because I hear my daughter say now, oh my God, of course I'm going to go for a home birth. Like that's just knowledge that I didn't have. And again, there's no right or wrong. It's simply that someone feels empowered about birth in a way that I didn't 20 years ago.
Did you have epidural?
I did end up having an epidural with my first. Yeah, I think that it was a very long birth. I wasn't dilating. I was kind of in a stage of controlling a lot. And
so you're like me then.
Yeah, I definitely had that. Mm-hmm. And it is what helped to relax my body. And I was able to push her out soon after, and it was quite lovely. But in retrospect, looking back at it, I remember shutting down when I got to the hospital. I remember feeling like I didn't want to leave my house, and I had to because that's what we had organized. I didn't have a midwife that I could lean on or talk to. So I was limited in what I knew. even though I was teaching yoga and even though I taught prenatal and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I did my first home birth and, you know, I was downstairs cooking for the mom and it was like this whole, like everyone's in the bed and it was, I was like, oh, this is how it can be. A mother-centered experience can be this way. And that was just so exciting for me. So even though I didn't have that experience and my experiences are beautiful in their own way, I think it's so essential for everybody to learn about birth the way that we're talking about it. Whether you're going to be a mother or not, whether you are a man or a woman, what we all have in common is we all grow in mother. Whether I know that mother, love that mother, or never knew her, I was part of her ecosystem, you know, and her stress levels or her bliss levels were helping to shape who I am today. So for me, my passion is to work with mothers through meditation and yoga, mostly through meditation, because if we start to uplift mothers and heal mothers and support mothers and help mothers' state of consciousness get to a better place, then we're changing the world. Because the rest of it is band-aids. Mother is the matrix.
Maybe you want to explain a little bit more the complicated word that me and Marina has a problem pronouncing.
Vedic. That's a beautiful way to wrap up. So Vedic meditation is an incredibly simple, effortless practice that you do twice daily. And you do an AM meditation and a PM meditation, 20 minutes each sitting. Your PM meditation is a little bit before dinner, whatever time works for you. And your AM meditation is when you wake up. And it's a self-sufficient meditation. So I've taught so many different styles of meditation, and I never had a daily meditation practice. It would be like, oh, I'm teaching a training meditation. Oh, something bad happened. I'll meditate. And it wasn't until I started practicing Vedic meditation that I actually had a non-negotiable daily, twice daily practice. So the way that you learn Vedic meditation is you learn it in person, the way it's been taught, you know, for many, many, many years. And you do a 4-day course. With a trained teacher. So if someone that's listening to this wants to learn in Los Angeles, I can teach them. But if they live somewhere else, they just reach out and I'll refer a colleague to them. You learn over 4 days, 90 minutes a day. So it's quite short. You go 90 minutes, 4 days in a row with your teacher. And after that, you are a self-sufficient meditation practitioner for the rest of your life.
So you don't have to listen to anything or read anything or watch anything.
Nothing.
You just know what to do after 4 days.
You know what to do after 4 days. You have your personal mantra that's given to you specifically for who you are by your trained teacher. And the difference for me is I think all meditations are wonderful, just like all healing modalities are wonderful.
Yeah.
But what I love about this unique technique is that you don't need anyone to practice it. You can practice it anywhere, whether there's noise, whether your kids are playing downstairs, whether you're on a plane, train, car, sitting down, not driving. But, you know, as long as you have back support, because it's all about gaining rest and removing stress from your body. And the way that we gain rest and remove stress is by not controlling anything, by not focusing, by not controlling, by not forcing, by not putting effort. So you sit in a comfortable chair, back support so that you can let your belly soften, let your head drop, and you think your mantra effortlessly. And as you do that, you're not suppressing thoughts. You simply become the mindful observer of it all. And with this technique, what you begin to experience is what we call restful alertness. And it really is very revolutionizing, because when you start to deplete the stress inventory from the mind and body on a daily basis, just like when you brush your teeth, you're taking stress out of the mouth and out of the body, just like when you empty your bowels, just like that, twice daily you meditate. What begins to happen is in the waking state, you can show up with greater relevance, with greater creativity, with greater interactivity versus reactiveness. And a lot more relevant to what is now, not what was just an hour ago or yesterday, not what might happen, but what is right now. So I think that for mothers, my greatest wish is that I can teach as many mothers as possible this technique so that they have it in their pocket.
So they have their tool to navigate through
this most world. Essential tool.
We're going to put all your information and all about this underneath great. The video. So thank people you. Who are watching, they can like check you out and great. See all that. Yeah, all that magic you do.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have so many questions for you, but you have to wrap up, right?
Yeah, thank you so much, really. This wow. means so
wow. We'll do a part here. Two.
I know,
we'll
we need a post. A
we'll do
a part. More questions. Right?
You had great questions. We'll do a postpartum part two.
Yeah.
That was our next yes. kind of, you know,
yeah.
mothers and postpartum and
yeah. and then leave. The turn. Yeah. Oh, all those
we
things.
Had all those things. Yeah. You have to come back yes. in like 6 months. Maybe yeah. you would love to do it.
I would be honored.
Definitely have you again. And
yeah. Thank
maybe
you.
We can part meditate. Two.
Yeah. I, you know, yeah. they're going to both be meditators by then, everyone who's listening. And so then we'll be able to talk about how meditation yeah. has helped their motherhood journey.
I did this conversation like really made my month not oh, only yeah. like I'm so grateful you
I'm
could
so
make
happy.
It
thank you so thank much. You for having me and thank you for the platform that you're creating and for being such special mothers.
I just want to so support everyone and give as much information as possible and not only talk about fashion or health because
yeah.
like I feel like these days people don't give a shit about it anymore, you know. like we just want to like feel yeah. good within ourselves inside, mm-hmm. not how our hair look, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, maybe it's my new thing as a mom. I don't know, but.
Yeah. Well, important. I think you're putting a spin on it and you're inviting a lot of people from your industry
yeah.
to actually start speaking their truth
yeah.
and to start finding a deeper connection with themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the way that you do it is by doing it yourself first.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.